No Direction and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Sounds good. Hi, everybody. My name is Linda Zayas-Palmer. I'm a developer for Paizo. I work on Pathfinder Society scenarios, and this year I have taken over with the Pathfinder Society Adventure Card Guild scenarios. So I can certainly speak to your questions on that. Who here has played the Pathfinder Adventure Card Guild scenarios? About half of the room? Very cool.
Excellent. I'm Ron Lindeen. I'm a developer with Paizo. I primarily work on the Adventure Path line. I've been with Paizo for about 7 months now. Before then was sort of the big adventure card game sort of, you know, booster sort of fan. For each of the boxes up until Mummy's Mask, the first three boxes, I produced an entire variant Adventure Path sort of on my own to publish. Just to get my goal was, well, if you've got all these great cards, arrange them all in new ways. You don't need any new cards, just, you know, arrange the cards you've already got. Slightly different in theory from the Adventure Card Guild, which tended to put more story into the games and was certainly willing to come up with new cards to enhance the play. A lot can go on with the cards in the box, and so we've got at least a couple different ways of doing that.
Yeah, so it looks like most of the folks here have played the Adventure Card Game before. How about on Twitch? Are the people there experienced with the Adventure Card Game? Oh. Okay. Fair enough. I'm just wondering if we should start with what is the Adventure Card Game, or whether people will be more interested in moving forward into. Well, I mean, I can certainly start with a little bit of what is the Adventure Card Game.
Oh, who's here?
Hi, Mike.
No,
that's all right. That's all right.
9, 10, 11 wasn't any of those.
Can I join you?
Of course you can, Mike.
Plus, there's only so many rooms up here.
Yeah.
You will find it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I went to all of them. So it's all good.
We've gotten as far as introductions. So, I mean, as someone who needs no introduction,
Go ahead and introduce me. No, it's fine.
This is Mike Selinker, everybody.
Hi. I made a Pathfinder Adventure card game once. I am merely checking to see if any of my other team is joining me, or if I am exactly all of the design team today, which is fine. I can do that because I know everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm. We believe in you, Mike.
I appreciate that.
You made a pretty cool game, you know.
I like to think so. Okay, so I have sent up the flare, and we'll see if it happens. But hello, everyone. Thank you for coming.
So just before you got here, I asked the room who here had played the Adventure Card Game before, and at least almost all of the hands went up.
At least almost all.
There may have been one or two that didn't.
Cool.
It was a little hard to
Well,
see
actually, that. That's awesome, whoever's hand didn't go up, because I will be very interested in your reaction to the new edition that we're doing, because we're trying to make it more accessible than it is now. And so even though it's still pretty cool, it's we've been making the same game in one way or another since 2013 and 2012, I guess, and you know, maybe we made it better this time. So it'll be cool if we get some reactions to some of the directions that we're going. So cool. So where do we want to start?
Do we want to talk about what's out there right now, or do we want to talk about what's coming up next?
Let's talk about the short term. So let's talk about what's happening here. So we have Season of Tapestries Tides?
Yes, we have Season of Tapestries Tides launched here for the Adventure Card Guild. And so the Adventure Card Guild, for those of you who haven't played it yet, has been going on now. This is season 5 that we just started. It started with season 0. The Adventure Card Guild is, well, on the one hand, it's more adventures that you can play with the base sets that you already have. We have at least one entire season worth of adventures for each base set. So that's as many adventures as come in the box, again, that we have available. And another thing, too, that we've really been looking to do with it is connect the Card Guild with the Pathfinder Society Role-Playing Guild and hook that into its story so that you can have crossovers between the two of them.
You guys went nuts this time.
Yeah.
Like, so so previously we would take the game box and we would craft a story that was compatible with the game box. So the Wrath of the Righteous one was actually sort of a crisscrossing story where the Wrath of the Righteous set was some characters started on the in Galarian, and then they ended up going to the Abyss, and they went back to Galarian, then they went to the Abyss again. And the Adventure Card Guild started sucking you into the Abyss, and then you went back to Galarian, and then you went to the Abyss, and then you went back to Galarian, and then you went to the Abyss again. So they were never in the same... These two groups were never in the same place. Like, they kept seeing each other as they went by, and it was just like, you know, the Rashomon version of Wrath of the Righteous. And Rathomon. So that was great, right? But then on the next one, the Faction's Favor set, all of a sudden these guys came in with, what if we had a plot that sort of more had some touchstones on the RPG guild stuff that's going on, and it had some nice little pockets where you could just identify that these were related events, but not, you know, great. This thing, it's a giant jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah. Well, this season, how many of you played the big special event, the Haojin Cataclysm, on Friday night? One person? Okay. Did you play the cards?
No, I played the role-playing side because we'll be doing the cards next month.
Yeah, there you go. Cool. There you go.
So the way we set that up with that special is that we have this season that's kicking off for both the card side and the role-playing side, and the start of season 5 is the card game launches the season for everybody. They are the vanguards. They are the advanced team that's going into this extremely dangerous demiplane, and they're the ones who are trusted to start out with this exploration. And then you have the special that launches, and that's sort of, when does the backup arrive? When are we not the first people who are in here? And so then you have both the card teams and the role-playing guild teams working together. And Ron knows a lot about this adventure.
That's true. When you do get around to playing it, you will find it is skillfully written by an author, both handsome and intelligent.
I agree. I agree with this assessment. And easy to edit.
Yeah, but the fun thing about it is the directive that was get. I actually played in the role-playing version of the special. It's one of the times I got to sit and play at this convention, which is great. What was interesting to me is the directive given to the role-playing author... Was Mike Kimmel?
Mike Kimmel. Yeah.
And the directive given to me for what's sort of got to happen to lay all this out was basically the same, but oh man, did we go off in totally different directions.
Yeah.
That was actually a lot of fun. It's fun to see.
Yeah, it's cool to watch because everybody's on this project is so talented that you get, you know, you kind of set a thing in motion and everybody goes, oh, I got an idea, I'm going to go over here. And then you realize, wait, if they go over there, then this thing better do this. So you call the other person and say, I don't know if you know, but it's going in this direction. And then eventually you sort of get to, it's like Sergeant Pepper. Eventually it gets done in a day of the life, and you know that they were aiming for the right ending, right? But I don't think the process is really built around trying to line everybody up. It's mostly like everybody works in here, and then we finally get to where we intended to be at the end.
Well, for this one, it was fun because I sent an email to both of them and had myself in it. So I was like, "Hey, Ron, Mike, Mike, Ron, we're together on this. And then I was just watching the ideas unfold, which was a lot of fun. Because they're both amazingly creative people, and I'm really happy with how it all turned out.
You know, and then Keith Richmond, who has done most of the design, the mechanical design on a lot of the Adventure Card Guild stuff, and also on the base sets, comes in and says, okay, we need to polish off that edge, because that's a cliff we can't go over, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And so the whole team gets together and produces a really great end result, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what the end result is. I know what the end result of chapter one is. Mm-hmm. We'll see what keeps happening. Mm-hmm. That's going great. The special seemed to be really good. How's the open going? Is it finals?
The finals will be today. I understand that in the last round they got to a tie, and so I went over to talk to the ACG folks, and they said, "Hey, we're at a tie. How are we going to break this tie?"
Well, we never had that problem.
Yeah. We decided that the number of blessings remaining in the blessing deck was going to be our tiebreaker, but it was just they both have 146 points. What do?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
We had one of the teams that I advanced past the first round was a team of one person. Who I think didn't get paired up with another team. It's like, well, you can just play four characters. Yeah. Oh, okay, let's see how this goes.
Oh,
and well enough to advance, as it turns out.
Yeah, somebody told me they did that in the competition. So I'm impressed that they got very far with that strategy.
So we just jumped into saying the open. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the open is?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so the open is, you know, the you're usually just looking at the card game from a cooperative perspective, but in the open, you have teams of people, or one person in that case, who are sort of competing to perform as well as they can in this challenging adventure. And this series is based off the Bonekeep adventures. If you've played those role-playing guild adventures, very infamous for being difficult.
They are not easy.
Yes.
Jen McTeague wrote the adventure turned over something with a few many dozens of proxy cards, which we had to trim down a little bit, but it's really clever. We try to save some of our more intricate challenges for this. So this one was, can you build a character out of a character deck and an ultimate deck? And fast. And since the ultimate decks are designed to maximize various elements of the character, you have to make the smart decisions very quickly. And so that seems to have gone pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
We really enjoy these sort of different formats that our game can be played in, because they show the breadth of the system, but also they give people a chance to try something different, that they're not just doing the same thing all the time. So it's great. What other organized play? That's everything, right?
The best thing for organized play is that we've got this new season that's spinning up, and it starts in this extremely dangerous demiplane, but. The PCs do eventually make it out. This one's using the Skull and Shackles base set. The PCs do eventually make it out of this demiplane, but then they're still not safely home. They end up going on adventures all throughout Tin Sha, which is sort of an Eastern inspired continent, and we really wanted to be able to explore both some places that have been fan favorites there, and also some places that Paizo has never set any adventure before, because there are certain things you can do with a card game adventure that'd be trickier to do with a role playing adventure where this place is so very dangerous, maybe that the role playing game might say, okay, well, you know, this has to be an adventure for really high level characters, but with the card game, there are certain things we can put in place to make those adventures work. So
plus, we also
really excited to see how that turns out.
We also managed to get the ninja and the samurai out in time. For this, so they can,
yeah,
so they can play in their home area, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Which is cool. So great adventure card guild stuff. We actually know what's following it, and we're excited about that too, but we can't talk about it.
Yeah.
So, although it might have something to do with Curse of the Crimson Throne.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so that takes us to what we're releasing. We just released, no, sorry, what month is it? It's August.
It's right? August, yeah.
So we probably haven't released the Wilderness deck yet. Is that correct?
Ultimate
Wilderness deck?
Ultimate Wilderness?
Yeah, it's out.
It's for sale right now.
I was going to say I got mine, but I know sometimes they get a little early track. To the office.
We get ours in a clump. They print them all at the same time, so I lose complete track. Mm-hmm. So we probably should write a blog about that. So Ultimate Wilderness deck is the last in the five Ultimate series that we people have been asking for years. They take your character decks and they turn them into even cooler character decks. So those have been great to design because they allowed us to do some thought experiments that we wouldn't have done otherwise. When we have a class deck, we're maybe limited to one or two new themes that we can do. So barbarians get war paint and improvised weapons. Well, you don't have room for anything else. So that's what you get. Whereas these ultimate decks, we've been able to do some crazy nonsense, like ultimate. Some of our armors are just completely bonkers. Some of the we did an entire suite of mushrooms that in the Wilderness deck that was particularly clever, I thought. Especially great because my design team is evenly divided on the issue of whether mushrooms are fantastic or the devil. And so, we constantly tease those. We constantly tease Gabby and Tannis and Chad with our mushroom cards because they hate mushrooms so much. So that's the end of that series. We put the class deck series on hold because we're real busy, and so there's only so much we can work on at a time, and we wanted to give most of our attention to the next things I'm going to talk about. But we also have one other thing that happened in the last month is we released our free RPG day character, yet another goblin, because we like goblins. His name is Knock Knock, and Knock Knock is from the Pathfinder Kingmaker game that my friends at Owlcat are working on, busily away at. And this is a goblin whose daily life is that the other goblins beat on his head like a drum. Like, he has a nice hollow-sounding head, so that when they want to go into battle, they just on his head and get everybody to inspired. He's the only one who's not too inspired by that. But, everybody serves, right? So Knock Knock believes he is actually a god. The goblins have four gods. He believes he's the fifth. There is nothing in a principle that says you have four gods that doesn't mean you can't have a fifth. So why not him? And he's wrong, but that's irrelevant to him. And so, he's a very fun character. He has a mechanic that no other character has ever had, which is that he counts the number of cards of a type in the deck list of any location he goes to and exploits that, which is a good, really fun mechanic. We got Knock Knock out. I don't know the answer to the question whether it's available in the store yet. I think it is.
Yes, it is. Yep. Yeah, okay. Knock Knock's downstairs in the Paizo booth.
Excellent. So he's fun. You should just take, if you got $5 or whatever, it's totally worth it. I think that's the last of the products that we got out under this banner, first edition banner. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Yeah, so now we've been focused on something else, which is that we talked, we were going to make a new set, we got everybody together, And I raised my hand and said, what if it was really different? And expected to be told, no, go back to your hole and design another set. And I didn't get that. I got a very welcoming response. So we decided to do some very different things. There was a point where we have a store in Seattle called Mox Boarding House. And it's one of the great gaming stores in the United States. And so I went in there one day, and the guys were like, hey, Mike, great to see you. And one of the guys that was there was counting out Magic singles cards, right? He was just sort of laying them out and getting them ready for whatever process Magic singles cards go through. And so I looked, and he was sitting under a display of all four adventure paths of the Pathfinder Adventure card game on little J-hooks pointed down right over his head. And I said, hey, do those ever fall on you? And he said, oh yeah, all the time. I was like, okay, I know what I'm not going to jail for. Like, what if our game box didn't have to be heavy enough to kill a cat? And so we went back and we did some analysis, and we started to figure out how we could make the system where we didn't sell you the same longsword and the same cure spell and the same dagger and the same leather armor over and over and over again, because that's boring and we don't want to let... It's not like we even write those cards anymore. We just say, we just write in leather armor into a spreadsheet, and we stop writing at that point. That's stupid. We should be paid more than that. We should be paid more for... We should do more work for our pay, I should say. We should also be paid. No, that's completely not true. Completely not true. We're completely well compensated. So what we did is we broke the game in half. We decided to make a core set, which you will only ever have to buy once, and you can... It will have all the core cards you need in it. It will have an adventure path with 10 scenarios in it based on a module that I really like called Dragon's Demand. If you've ever played it, it's... I think everybody in it takes what's going on very seriously. And yet, you could tell the author... was not really. Like, there are moments where you just go, is this really your motivation? like you thought this would work, right? And everybody's just a little bit off, and it's great. So I loved writing this. I wrote the entire adventure flavor text in one day, and I just had a blast doing it. So the core set changes some really significant things about the game. The first is we no longer have adventure path and scenario cards. They're gone. They're never coming back. Instead, we took something from what Linda's team was doing with the Adventure Card Guild and said, what if we wrote, actual stories and stuff? And it took us years to come to that conclusion. But it seems really obvious in retrospect. So, because like people like Ron, we would write, in our adventure path and whatever, and we would write our flavor text in boxes this big, right? And that was like all you needed to know about what was going to happen in the adventure. And Ron would write these scenarios on his website, which you should plug right now.
I did before he came in, but I'll do it again, yeah. WelbyBumpus.com.
Exactly. So he'd write the scenarios, and he would go into this great expansive discussion about what was...
Page for you.
Yeah, which is what was happening. And we're like, man, why can't we do that? That sounds like we can do that. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely nothing stopping us from doing that. And so... So now the core set comes with a 24-page storybook. So now it's like it's a real story. You can jump, you can understand it. You get who the motivations behind all the characters and all that stuff. So those are gone. we have rebuilt a number of... We want everything to be compatible. This is really important. Nothing in the game is being invalidated. All the things like... A great example of this is roll cards. Characters get roll cards, and they can branch two directions from that. That's staying the same. We want that. It's just that you get them earlier. Now. Because people were looking at these things, you know, and go, oh, man, this looks great. I'd really like to do this. I guess I'll wait 3 months till we get to that point before making the choice I'm making right now. And, you know, that just... So now we let you branch earlier so that you have... I think the function of the card didn't change at all, but we just wanted to respond to what people were saying to us. And so a number of other things that are changing. We've decided to change how blessings work. Blessings had a sort of core problem, which is that they're the most powerful cards in the game. And what we discovered, which was fine in home play, in Adventure Card Guild play, people were taking them all the time. And we're just like, that's not the game we want. We want people to want to take armor and weapons and stuff, and spells and stuff like that.
You mean when they get a card feed, everyone's like, yeah, I'll take as many blessings as I can. Possible, okay, yeah. Once I've done that, I get
right,
a card feed, I'll
it's
see
just
what else.
So degenerate. Yeah. We didn't want that. It just warps the gameplay. It's terrible. So we messed with them. We reduced their power a little bit, but we also changed a lot about how they function in the game. So now the blessing has a power on it that first off, we changed the name of the blessings deck. So the blessings deck is now called the Hourglass. The Hourglass it now has every blessing now has a power on it called the Hour. When it's the Hour, it affects the game in some meaningful way. If you've ever played our game Apocrypha, which is our follow-up to the Pathfinder Adventure card game, you know that when you play an omen, it changes the turn in some meaningful way. And since you don't know what omens you get at the beginning of the game, you know, you don't know what's going to happen to you over the course of the game. It's cool. Well, that happens now in a Pathfinder. You don't draw the omen. You don't draw the blessing in Pathfinder. We didn't change that. But now there's a global effect that governs your turn every game. Now, the early blessings don't have one. They're designed to be flat so that you can, you know, get into the game without too much trouble. But as you start, each god does a different kind of thing, which is what gods should do, right? Like, so we made that significant change. There's lots of other things in this regard. We changed how spell recharge works because it's one of the more arcane elements of our game. We changed how armor works because people undervalued it out of all proportion to its actual value. You know, stuff like that. So we made a number of significant core rule changes to make the game flow better and make people want different cards at different times. And I don't know, it feels good. It feels real good. We took it to PaizoCon, which is kind of like going to the Democratic National Convention and saying, does anybody want health care? they liked it. So that's good.
Were any of you able to demo that at PaizoCon? I don't know.
I don't know if any of you were out
there. I did.
Yes. We didn't bring it here only because we were just so swamped. Honestly, we don't really want any more feedback on it because it better be done. So we got that done, and it's pretty good. I mean, lots of different changes. I think you'll see them over a bunch of blogs that we're going to do. Basically, we wrote on the board, you know, some core principles that couldn't change. Then we wrote on the board some things that we wanted to change. We wanted the game to set up and tear down faster. We wanted the game to inject itself with more story. We wanted the game to feel more cooperative. Now, it's weird because it's a co-op game. There's no question that it's a co-op game. And yet, big enough game, you know, when player three seats away from you is taking their turn, just check my phone and see what's going on. And we don't want that. We don't want that at all. So we put in some things that made cooperating with each other quite a bit more important. And so I think you'll see all that over time, and it looks, I think, pretty good. The thing we're working on now is, so I mentioned that this was the core set. The concept is that you take the core set and you shuffle in another box to make your adventure if you're not playing Dragon's Domain. We have been wanting to do Curse of the Crimson Throne since we did Rise of the Runelords. It was going to be the second adventure path. And I hired Keith Richmond, one of our designers, because he had run Curse of the Crimson Throne three times from end to end, which is crazy. Don't do that. That's too much throne. Too many serpents. And I was like, this is the next thing you get to work on once we get done with Wrath of the Righteous, you know, whatever we're gonna do. And it never happened. So we finally got to Curse of the Crimson Throne. And we got to it at a great time because now it gets its own box that you shuffle into the core set, and that allows us to do all sorts of things. We are now able to do things that are set specific that don't care what the rest of the cards are. And so, for example, one thing I haven't told people is a few years ago I did a box called the Harrow Deck. The Harrow Deck, if you've never played it, is a tarot deck. It's Pathfinder's tarot deck. It's got 54 cards, which is one for each combination of the six main character abilities, sorry, the six main attributes, and the nine alignments. So take that grid, build it out in your head, strength over here, lawful good over here, all the way to the corner. There's one card for each of those. And they're ridiculous. They're completely nonsense. I've seen so many message posts about the meaning of this deck and how we built this, carefully, intricately crafted divination system. It's all just me and Kyle Hunter drinking beer and saying, what if the unicorn had a pear on his head, on his horn? That's it. Don't read anything.
But the unicycle riding bear, there has to be a reason for that, right?
There's a reason for it. It's that at that time, we had both had at least three beers. But it was fantastic. It was one of my favorite projects. It looks so good. In Curse of the Crimson Throne, every blessing is one of the Harrow cards. So you'll get to play with essentially your own Harrow deck inside Curse of the Crimson Throne, which we could never have done in our old format. And so we're very excited about that. Curse of the Crimson Throne is an adventure that I've wanted to do for a while simply because it is legit epic. It is pretty great. It's got all sorts of new mechanics. You're going to see this new concept. You know the status cards that Paizo put out, with the goblins, and he's bewildered and whatever. He's dazed and all that, right? So, we stole that idea and created these cards that are essentially status effects that let you get, you've been drained by the vampire and stuff like that. Well, in Curse of the Crimson Throne, there are things like plagued and stuff like that. You're going to see lots of things that decisions that you make in Curse will affect things that happen later on, and sometimes you have nothing but bad choices. So it's going to be pretty fun. So that's the major project on my team's plate. We are behind schedule on it, and we're very sad about that. But we are getting there, and it is really, really good. So I hope you try it, because I think it's neat. But then, if for some reason you've decided you've played enough Curse of the Crimson Throne, you can put that box aside and take another box, which I don't know what that is yet, and put its card into the core set, now you have a totally different experience. So that's what we've been doing, and it's super fun, and we really like what we did, and we hope that people will give it a chance, even if they're like, you know, don't screw up my game. We're trying not to screw up your game, but we think it's just legit better than it was before.
Can you talk for a minute? One of the things that the demo that they were doing that really impressed me was the design of replayability built into the base box.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely felt that the methodology behind the linear path that we have, which is important, like you need to still go from level 1 to level 20. This is not going to change about the game. But we wanted the sense that, you know, you could see the future. You could see what was coming up more. You could, you know, plan for future adventures based on, you know, the cards that you took out of the ones that you found. And so you're now going to be able to get to see cards in advance that you can't keep, but that you can use along the way, that you can later build your strategies around getting. We made sure that we had a lot more variety in the base set. So there are 12 characters in the base set that represent all the iconics. And there are 12 core iconics now, not 11, which is cool because the one you haven't seen is pretty rocket. We made sure that you could go back to certain scenarios multiple times. What else are you thinking of? What other aspects are you thinking of?
I remember we had the changing aspects of the villain.
Oh, right.
That would go through changing aspects of the scenario itself.
So one other thing we did, borrowed a thing from Apocrypha. It was originally in our design for Pathfinder, but we threw it away, which was there's no such thing as a... This is not quite right. I was going to say there's no such thing as a henchman card or a villain card anymore. That's not quite true. So there is a henchman card, and there is a card that is called a Storybane. And a Storybane says... It would have the text and image of, you know, this vampire and all of his abilities and all of his traits and all that stuff. But he doesn't get shuffled into a deck. Instead, a card that says, I'm a henchman, gets shuffled into a deck. And in that scenario, this henchman is, you know, subservient to the great vampire lord, let's say, who's a different card. Let's say that happens in Adventure 2. In Adventure 5, we say, remember that great vampire lord who was the villain? Well, now he's a henchman because he doesn't have to stay a villain anymore. And so we take him and we shuffle in the henchman card for him, and now we use the super great vampire lord. And by the way, those are final titles. Super great vampire lord is now the villain for this scenario. And then in Adventure 6, we're like, what if we get to see all the villains again? Well, now they're all henchmen. But now ultra super great vampire lord is the key villain. Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't exist. Maybe we need three villains at the same time. Well, we have three different villain cards we can shuffle in, right? And so it makes classic scenarios like Bizarre Love Triangle work better because now we can modify them to whatever kinds of cards we need. You know, things like that just seem smart. After a while, you know, you're making the same thing and you realize that you're loving your game despite its flaws. And so we can love it without those flaws too. We want to take some questions?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
How right in the front?
So, has healing changed in the new edition of Pathfinder Retro Cards?
Yes.
I thought healing was sort of one of the more overpowered things in the game.
Yes, it now just says the following words: heal one card. That is, the big change was simply stating, taking the gigantic phrase, shuffle 1d4 plus 1 cards from your discard pile into your deck down to 3 very short words, one of which is a number. We looked very strongly at how much healing was possible and specifically when it occurred. So we looked at it from the point of view of what cost healing would be. And so there's still a cure spell. It does what cure does. Like I guarantee you, if we change cure, if we busted down cure, there'd be riots in the street.
Yeah.
But cure is the only card that stayed the same in the healing set.
So the question for the folks on Twitch was, has healing changed?
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize I needed to say that.
Do you have a question for Twitch?
Yes.
Yes.
Trustum wants to know if the new rules will be compatible with the old set.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a great question. So the question is, will the rules be compatible with the old set? So he's not saying, now, to be clear, I already said that your cards will be compatible with each other, right? That's a different question. The question is, like, let's say I'm playing Skull and Shackles. What rule set do I use? And does it work, right? The answer is, we are going to make a rule set that covers all 4 previous sets. But we are going to need to port in some of the rules from the previous sets. So the new set won't have rules for ships, for example. It won't have rules for mythic paths and stuff like that. So we're going to have to go back to those rules and make sure they still work. So one of the rules that made it in completely unchanged was the cohort rule. Like there were things that were just off the table for redesign, because the cohort rule shows up in Mummy's Mask, in Wrath of the Righteous, in all of our adventure paths, and so forth. And we're just like, man, I don't want to go through all of those and issue ridiculous amounts of errata for that, right? It's just like, it's staying, you can't change it. So whereas ships are localized generally to Skull and Shackles and the 2 adventure paths now, including the Haojin Tapestry, that use it, we can potentially monkey with those a little bit without causing cataclysmic damage. So we're going to go back to each rule set and make sure that it functions exactly like we want it to do. Now, of course, you could also still play the old box with the old rules, because that experience still exists. But what, at the point at which you take your new character in and you pick up, just to give you an obvious example, the spell recharge template has changed on all the cards because it's too complicated and we made it work better. Great. If you can't figure out that we want the old cards to do that, maybe this isn't the game for you. Right, because it's pretty obvious, right? You just replace the word that, so they all start with the word banish now instead of discard, right? Because your natural reaction would be to banish it unless you have the skill that lets you keep the card, right? Start with banish. The ones in your old set now start with banish too. We're not going to issue errata on literally every spell to make that work, but it's obvious. But, I mean, when we're talking about specifics like the ship system and the trader system from Mummy's Mask and stuff like that, we're going to have to look at that again.
You had mentioned that the recharging spells has changed a lot. How has it changed?
I just said it starts with banish now.
Oh.
So the spell recharge now just says you banish the spell. However, if you happen to have Arcane or Divine, here's this other thing you can do.
Okay.
That'll get it into your thing. We actually moved spell recharge out of the phase that it's in. So this is incredibly precise surgery. But spells now do not recharge in the encounter that you play them in. They now recharge in a special phase right before your end of turn step. And the reason is players got really confused where exactly in the process they did this. Like, is this thing floating out in space while I'm shuffling cards? What happens if a card says during an encounter, shuffle a card into your deck? Does that happen after the recharge so that it's not at the bottom of my deck anymore? Like, oh, and we're just like, no, they don't want that anymore. Just put it over here. It'll be taken care of at the end of your turn, which is important in a lot of meaningful ways. And it allowed us to really solve a number of problems by moving that later in the turn. Those are things like nobody's going to boycott the game because of how spell banishing works. But I hope that the people will look at it from the point of view of just we wanted to take out a couple of barriers that slow people down. And so that's how that worked. Do we have some other questions? Go ahead.
When should we start looking for this new set in retail stores?
So that was, when should we start looking for this new set of retail stores?
Well, I mean, I'm told that it'll be out at PaizoCon. I don't control that. But part of my job is to make sure that that is a possibility. And so my expectation that is PaizoCon at the end of May again?
Yeah.
So my expectation is that it'll go out with the May shipments to subscribers, and it'll be available sometime thereafter. And same with Curse. At least that's my expectation. If for some reason one of those was a month after, I wouldn't be surprised.
So we have time for one more question.
Go ahead.
Yes.
You talked about a little bit better co-op engagement. They're not picking up the phone. Any sort of as far as like examples of that?
Sure. So
just a sec. That was a request for more information about the better co-op engagement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's hard to look at like any one thing and say that. It's just more that we specified that as a goal. So if you've played my game Thornwatch, you'll know that every character in that game has a red power that works on other people's turns. And so we wanted to make sure there was more of that, right? There was more like reason to care. We also wanted to incentivize staying together a little bit more because you can generally help each other. But the most significant change is a concept called Champion. Champion is an action that you can take that says if somebody fails a check to defeat a monster, or defeat a bane, and in some cases to acquire a boon, but not all cases, you can step in and say, I got this. And I can go after, I can cover for your mistakes. The thing that just happened, the fact that you failed to defeat the monster, that actually occurs. You still take all the damage, you still get blasted by the dragon fire, you know, whatever, you know. But then the card doesn't necessarily shuffle into the deck. If you're in the same place and you have a card to bury and you care enough, you can then just try to take care of that monster on the spot. That fits into the question about, you know, setup and teardown, right? And how much time the game takes. If we can just get rid of that card, if you can get rid of that card, rather than making you work through it. The other major thing we did in that regard, the latter regard, is we changed the game length. We now have variables as to how many cards are in the Blessings deck based on how long you want the game to go, and how many cards are in each location deck based on how long you want the game to go. So you can now really play a game in a half hour. We actually had that as a design. I'll be honest. We actually had that as a design goal solely because of the Pathfinder Adventures app, where we were literally playing, you know, games in 15 minutes, and going, why didn't that game work like this? Right? And so we're like, we can do that. So we now made that possible. Any other wrap-up stuff? What else? What's downstairs that people should go buy? What's in the Paizo booth?
So in terms of the car things?
Or whatever you're excited about. Whatever you're excited about. It's downstairs.
Well, so we have the Ultimate Wilderness deck and Knock Knock, as we've mentioned before. But from a general perspective, we have the playtest books for the...
Oh, we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about
that.
Yeah. One of the other... Let me get this in. Thank you for bringing that up. I get this in right at the end. This game was strongly influenced by the fact that Paizo was doing a reboot on the RPG. And so we've been lockstep with the design team of the RPG going, okay, so what are kobolds now? You know, whatever. And so we're spending a lot of time trying to make the two games more compatible. The only problem is ours has to be done before theirs does. So I know they're gonna betray me. I know Bowman is at the last minute go, Minotaurs have three horns. And now I'm just like, dude, I gave you the two-horned Minotaur that I thought you were going to, you know, I just know that's going to happen.
And, you know, I'm seeing that look on his face, this sort of like.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's a really good playtest document. You should pick it up. I think it's a vast improvement on the previous edition. If you'd like to host a panel in which I list all the reasons that the game needed to be redone, I will happily be there. But I like the direction that's going, so I think you should pick it up. You no longer have the Starfinder...
Armory.
Armory. No, the Armory sold out.
Yeah. The special edition of the core rulebook sold out, but we have the core rulebook itself down there.
So. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, anyway, Paizo booth, still a couple hours left. Better get in there before I would strongly recommend getting there before 5 o'clock. Or, I mean, before 3
yes.
o'clock.
Yes.
Before
3
definitely.
O'clock. Before it closes,
three,
yes.
Before 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Because that last day's last line is horrifying.
Yeah. And we're at 103 in the corner. Where the Loan Shark booth is?
Yes, 2735 is the Loan Shark booth if you want to come see Apocrypha, which is that follow-up to Pathfinder, or you want to see Thornwatch or Ninth World or the Maze of Games or Dusk City Outlaws. We have all those games there, and they're very cool. So come see them. All right?
Excellent.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.
All right. Yay.
Thanks, all.
Thank you, everyone, on Twitch.
Bye, Twitch.